This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. This is the Morning Run on BFM 89.9. We've got Julian Ng this morning, also Ibrahim Sani, and me, Melissa Idris. 7:35 on the clock. Let's take a quick look at the biggest business news of the day. Singapore's Temasek and a consortium that includes China's Investment Corp and KKR have reportedly advanced to a second round of bidding for a minority stake in Yum Brands' China unit. So Yum Brands, they own the Pizza Hut and KFC fast food franchises, and they're trying to spin off their over 7,200 China restaurants by the end of the year.
I think back in December 2015, they announced that they want to split the China and US operations because the China operations were more risky and they wanted to ring fence investor against that, and so that investor can get a clearer way of valuing the entire company. So here we are, and now they want to sell a minority stake in that China portion.
You know, this valuation, right, following the split that you mentioned, Julian, in December, this values the Yum's entire China unit at between $8 billion and $11 billion. And based on its core earnings of about $1 billion, people will tell you that this is a fantastic valuation right now.
Yeah, it's about 8 to 11 times PE ratio, which if you have followed consumer stocks, you would know that that is very cheap, because with consumer stocks, you're talking about 15 to 20 times.
Well, you know, Temasek has been really liking retail consumer stocks, especially the F&B business. We heard, we spoke about recently, Eu Yan Sang being reportedly delisted from the Singapore Exchange because they had reportedly received a bid from Temasek. We also saw Temasek getting into Jumbo Seafood in Singapore as well. So that's clearly like an indicator. Perhaps they're moving more into consumer retail names. I'm curious to know whether this is yet another step in that direction with Yum Brands.
I think added on top of that consumer and retail layer is the fact that it's China, right? China is also a big pool, improving demographics, middle class is getting bigger and richer. So arguably, they're going to eat more fast food chicken.
But risky or not? Because, you know, we've all heard I don't know whether you guys got on your social media feeds the videos that went viral, rumors about, food and health
food
safety.
Scare.
Yeah, food scares in China.
Yep.
So I don't know whether going into the consumer retail fast food business in China, is that the best?
It is a challenging issue, because there is a increasing competition from the local players, not to mention also the traditional rivals like McDonald's and so on. So I think that is going to be a challenge, but I guess people like Temasek and CIC are long players, KKR, they are very long-term players, and perhaps they're looking to flip, given that they're buying at such a cheap price. But I'm not sure if Temasek can go up against the CIC, right? Is there going to be a level playing field here? You're talking about the largest sovereign wealth fund in China.
Yeah.
How are you going to go up against that, the home ground fighter?
Yeah, so that size against CIC, that risk of doing food business in China, all these are really big risks. But what is the option for Temasek? Do they sit on the sidelines, or do they just have to brave through this business despite of all these risks?
I think they have room to outbid, because you're talking 8 to 11 times PE ratio. You can bid till, I don't know, 15 times?
Yeah, 16 times. Yeah, which is the standard level of consumer business, yeah.
Okay, well, still, speaking about Singapore, Singapore wants listed companies that are the target of anonymous research reports or short sellers to quickly disclose information in order to address investors' concerns. Now, Singapore Exchange has seen some very high-profile listed firms being pressured by short sellers who have questioned their accounts. And this has triggered a fall in their share prices.
A lot of these stocks are also being owned by the Singapore government. So obviously they are sitting up and taking note of this. But just by way of a background, stocks like Noble and Olam had been subject of all these short selling attacks by anonymous research companies. Well, they're not so anonymous. With Noble, it's Iceberg. Iceberg Research wrote some very scathing report on Noble, and at the same time short selling the stock. So my question is, are these research reports a kind of market manipulation, right? So delivering...
You mean there's an agenda to it?
Not only an agenda, delivering a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy. I say something extremely negative about the stock and then I sell the stock and I make a lot of money in that process because the stock crashes and delivering a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy.
You know, SGX is also under scrutiny because plenty of companies have delisted on the exchange over the years. Melissa, you just mentioned Eu Yan Sang ahead. So I think with these kind of companies that, Nobel and Olam crashing, I think SGX is under a lot of scrutiny to ensure the integrity of their business.
This might be a separate issue because this is about extreme volatility in stock prices, and Singapore, this SGX, the Singapore market is calling for a kind of suspension,
yes,
so that investors can calm down and can make a more informed decision.
So what they're asking for two things. They're saying, okay, if you first you have to disclose your financial information. If you don't have enough time to do so, then at least halt trading in the meantime. And I think the reason why they're really coming up vocal about this is because if you remember, a couple of years ago, Singapore Exchange, SGX, came under a lot of scrutiny for their handling of their penny stock crash.
Yeah.
Do you remember that, Jules? Several companies, extreme volatility, there was a huge outcry as to whether SGX handled that right. And in response, they put in the circuit breakers. They had that, a whole lot range of measures put in place after that.
We're talking about tens of billions of Sing dollars being lost in that particular scandal mm-hmm. or saga. But my question is, do these market investors, speculators, traders, investors, whatever you call them, do they need hand-holding by the government? Do they need the kind of protection from circuit breakers and from halting? Right?
So I know you have an opinion about circuit breakers, but do you not see the positive step forward that SGX is trying to say? You know, investors have been concerned. Investors have left Singapore. I think they saw a huge drop in trading volume after that penny stock scandal. So they're trying to boost whatever reputation they have in trying to safeguard investors, right?
I think market crashes would not deter future investors. So why are regulators so concerned about the drop in the market unless so much collateral is tied in shares, right, connected to the property market or the business market? But apart from that, are investors smart enough to assess on their own? If I go out there and say that Telekom Malaysia is worth one ringgit compared to the price that they are right now trading right now, what would make market participants believe in me? They should be clever enough to say that, hey, I don't make sense. And if the market price actually crashes to one ringgit, then I think even way before it hits a ringgit, a lot of people will be coming in to buy mm-hmm. an asset like Telekom
Malaysia. So you think that market forces in itself, investors in it, in themselves will be savvy enough to know this, right?
I'm kind of asking that question, right? Take Yum Brands, for example. Right now, they're bidding $8 to $11 billion. If it came down to $2 billion, for example, does the China government, are they going to impose a halt so that KKR or CIC or Temasek can spend time thinking about it?
Yeah, there's also this problem of where do you draw the line, right? I mean, if the moment you say, you know, the government needs to intervene on this issue, then the government will have to intervene on the other issues. I think just let the market behave the way it would.
7:43 right now, and over to the Philippines, where the economy there grew faster than most other nations in Asia in the first quarter. Of course, they were spurred by spending ahead of the May elections. GDP for the Philippines increased 6.9% in Q1, which is the highest in almost 3 years. Very respectable figure.
We were talking about India the other day and the forecast is for 8%, the highest growth in the world.
Should there be good monsoon rains?
Yeah, and now Philippines almost 7%. A lot of election-driven spending.
Yeah, that's right. Government consumption has surged close to 10% the first quarter. And of course, household expenditure as well climbed 7%. Now, these kind of things actually contribute to about 70% of Philippines' GDP. And of course, this election fever, if I may call it as such, is driving this growth up.
Okay, so Duterte has been handed the Philippine economy in good health on a silver platter.
Yeah. Right?
What will he do with that? Will we see continued growth in the Philippines economy? that remains to be seen what his policies on economy are.
I can argue the same thing about the U.S. as well, because Barack Obama is leaving the U.S. economy in a better shape than he got it. And the new president, whoever that person is, right, or in Barack Obama's own words, whoever she will be, will this continue on?
That's not biased at all.
Yeah, but as far as the Philippines are concerned, I guess there are a lot more structural issues. And it's right to say that Mr. Aquino has done such a good job because he brought in the foreign investment. He had this anti-corruption platform, and that created the confidence that was needed for the Filipino market, not only for foreign investors, but for their own citizens who were working overseas as well. There were a rise in the foreign remittances going back into the Philippines. And do you know that we're talking about tens of billions of money flowing back into the country from overseas Filipino workers? In the U.S. alone, $10 billion flowed back so far in 2016.
Wow.
UAE, a lot of Filipinos are working there. About 1.8 billion flowed in. So in Singapore, 1.5 billion, coming in back into the Philippines. The overseas remittances are such a big feature of the Filipino GDP.
Yeah, they are a remittance state. That's right. And this complexion will not change even under Duterte.
It's fascinating that 10% of the economy is their diaspora sending money back in.
Yeah.
Whereas, other countries, ours not excluded, we're struggling with money being sent out, being parked elsewhere.
We're very afraid of the ringgit as well. not only foreigners, but the locals as well.
7:46 right now, more local business news coming up after this. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.